good morning. Born and raised, graduate of BHSN. And in fact, I was down yesterday afternoon and evening and picked my mother out for dinner for her birthday. And
nice.
I got there and she handed me this old, like 50 suitcase with all this stuff in it, and including my high school diploma.
Very nice.
So,
she was trying to clean out the house.
Yeah, she is. And dump it on me was kind of what I concluded.
That's right. Well, what's your stuff?
Yeah, I'm going to say, you know, it's your stuff. It's appropriate. She gave it to you.
Well, unfortunately, she didn't consult with me and give me my stuff when she threw away my baseball card.
Oh.
Which years ago, which would have been worth a lot of money today. But I've got some things. Yeah, I took it home and I thought, okay, now I just moved it from her house to mine.
That's right. But now you have those memories at your access daily. You don't have to go searching for them.
Including a pair of my the uniform shorts that we wore to play basketball in high school, which are much, much shorter than what
they wear today.
Margaret's in the alteration business. She can help you out with that if you need some breathing room, so to speak.
Well, I definitely would need some breathing room, and it would be nice if they covered more of my legs.
That's exactly right, yeah. Looking back at pictures from those times, yeah, we were all a little bit skinnier back then. Kevin Briniger is our guest this morning. He's the president and the CEO of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. And a busy week last week. Well, it's always busy at the Chamber, but last week on Tuesday, the Chamber of Commerce released its second public policy letter to the state's major party candidates for governor. And tell us what was in that letter and what message you're hoping to get to the candidates as what we're only, 50 days from pulling that lever here in the state of Indiana and across the country.
Well, we were particularly emphasizing our transportation infrastructure needs and our desire to have 2017 be the year of transportation infrastructure in our state, particularly with the General Assembly. And we need help and leadership from the gentleman who is elected governor in November. The General Assembly, to their credit, did enact a significant, but albeit short-term, funding plan last session that will bring in about $1.1 billion over a four-year period, with the bulk of that money going to local communities, to local roads and streets, but we still have our state highways to maintain. And the real issue here is that we pay gasoline tax and diesel fuel tax based on the number of gallons purchased. And as our vehicles and the trucks as well have become more and more fuel efficient, you can drive farther on a gallon of gas or a gallon of diesel fuel. And so we're not spending as much on fuel taxes as we did 10 or 20 years ago. Plus, we have the vehicles that don't run on those types of fuels at all, totally electric vehicles, and we've got delivery trucks and big trucks running on natural gas that pay nothing because the taxing system hasn't kept up with technology. And so literally, folks are driving much further and paying less than they were 10 or 20 years ago, and so we've got to get our revenue system to catch up and look at some other alternatives because since the last gas tax change, the purchasing power of gasoline tax revenues has declined 25% and diesel fuel 55% since the last time that fuel tax rate was changed. So
what takes so long
priority.
To get that rate changed?
Well, it's going to be completely different way of taxing it.
Yeah, it's painted as a tax increase rather than, just keeping up with inflation. And, it's hard, in this era of, people signing no tax pledges and knowing that, that they're going to get beat up in their campaigns. And so it's hard to muster the political courage and will to even, enact legislation that would just try to keep up with and make up for the lost purchasing power that has occurred through greater technology and fuel efficiency.
It sounds to me like what they need to do is change the way that this is the how we pay for our roads. Maybe you know, maybe it's a completely different way of looking at, you know, how we allocate money. Perhaps instead of the tax on gasoline the way we've done it in the past, maybe you do something as far as a sales tax, and part of the sales tax goes towards the roads, because the increase in technology and the things that we've got happening with technology are not going to go away. It's just going to keep on, you know, we're just going to keep on having multiple streams for different energy use. So how are you ever going to keep up with that just using the one model?
Well, I think you make a good point, and that's part of the overall discussion. We're going to continue to rely on fuel taxes, and they need to be index for inflation, but we need to look at other things, whether it's registration fees, whether it's you know, basing the revenues on how heavy is your vehicle and how far you drive, because that's really the determinant of, you know, how much you're contributing to the damage to the roads. Now that causes some concern among some drivers. They feel like, you know, perhaps that's Big Brother, but in this instance, you know, the state wouldn't care where you drive. They just care how far. And, you know, we know the weight of your vehicle from the vehicle registration. And, you know, focus on that. And if people are worried about, you know, Big Brother and being followed, they need to realize that if they carry a cell phone, it's got a tracking device
right
in it. So those are some of the things, looking at perhaps building new roads. You know, nobody likes the T-word, toll. But if we want to get things done and keep not have our transportation infrastructure be an inhibitor to economic growth, then from our view, all options have to be on the table and be discussed and vetted out very thoroughly. And we have a legislative interim study committee that is looking at that this summer, and it will is scheduled to come up with recommendations before the General Assembly convenes in January.
Kevin Briniger is our guest this morning. He's the president and CEO of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce, checking in with us here on the Monday morning in September. The Beyond the Bicentennial campaign is going on as well. Tell us what that's about and how the Chamber's putting that together.
Well, that is a series of four letters that are going to the two gubernatorial candidates, the two major party gubernatorial candidates, and being shared with the public and the media, and talking about priorities that are in the Chamber's Indiana Vision 2025 plan, which is a long-term economic development action plan for Indiana that was first adopted in 2012. We've refreshed the plan, adjusted and adopted some new goals after being at it 5 years. We've celebrated the victories and the accomplishments that we've had. But we've still got 9 years to go, and we're reminding these candidates, in John Gregg's case, and making Eric Holcomb aware of these priorities. There are 33 goals that are in four goal areas, and we're saying that these are the things that we need to focus on to make Indiana most competitive, to have the best jobs and economic climate, and be able to you know, have good living wage jobs and raise our families and enjoy our lives here in the Hoosier State.
And when we look at what's going on there, some of those factors, they're good for everybody. It's just not the business climate as well. We're looking at health
absolutely.
Issues. We're looking at quality of life issues. Talk about what's in there.
Well, the mission statement of Indiana Vision 2025 talks about, you know, maximizing prosperity for the citizens of the state, first and foremost, and their enterprises. And we've come to realize at the Indiana Chamber that if people are well off, then our businesses will be well off. We've also come to realize in my time leading the Chamber, if we didn't know it before, that elected officials come and go. They're term limited. In some cases, they move on to other things. They get defeated in elections. And it's really, the Indiana Chamber of Commerce has been in existence for 94 years, that is in this for the long haul. And so we've taken it upon ourselves, put it on our shoulders, to take a responsibility for Indiana's economic future. And, you know, that's why we developed this plan. That's why we're pushing so hard and, you know, through a lot of discussion. But you're right. It is not just a plan for businesses' bottom line. It's a plan for economic prosperity for all Hoosiers. And, you know, it includes things like, you know, we need to become a healthier state. You know, we are in the bottom 10 states in our smoking rank and in our obesity rank, and you're going to see proposals not only from us but from an alliance of health-minded organizations this coming session that targets smoking and some things we can do from a public policy perspective to discourage young people from starting to smoke and helping those who currently smoke and would like to quit. There's a large percentage of smokers every year attempt to quit at least once. And one staggering statistic that I learned this summer from the Aggie School of Public Health is that the average person who successfully quits smoking has tried to quit 11 times.
Yeah, it's not easy, as a lot of us have known or tried. The good news in this angle is, again, we're talking about public wellness, getting better, less obese, getting more active, being healthier. How we've already done a good job in the business climate. What has made Indiana successful in making other businesses or people looking from the outside looking in, what has made Indiana so attractive?
Well, we have what has been ranked as the best business regulatory climate in the country. That doesn't mean that we don't go out and get the bad guys, but Mitch Daniels started this cultural change of state government to say, look, you know, we need to be here to help the people who create jobs do so, help them understand the laws and regulations that they're supposed to follow, and not be just out there intentionally trying to, as we see often with the federal agencies in recent years, just, you know, trying to hang everybody by their thumbnails for the least little violation or missed paperwork. And Governor Pence continued that, and we need either of these two gentlemen who become elected in November to continue that as well. So we've done that. We've lowered both our individual and corporate income tax rates to make Indiana more attractive, particularly on the corporate side. We were sixth highest in the country. We're currently phasing that down. We'll be second lowest. That's a big difference. We became the first state in the Midwest to be a right-to-work state. You know, to say that employees cannot be forced to join and pay dues to a union if they don't want to be. And like it or not, that is a huge determinant on whether companies will come to your state and whether they'll invest in your state. We learned from site selection experts during the right to work discussion that fully 30-50% of all big projects that were out there across the country that we could compete for wouldn't even consider a state that wasn't a right to work state. So until we enacted that legislation, there were 30-50% of the projects that we weren't even getting a chance to step in the batter's box and take a swing at. The IADC and has maintained data on the number of companies and the number of jobs that have come to Indiana since 2012, where the companies specifically cited right to work as the reason or major reason why they were coming to Indiana. And then there are a number of other things. We got ourselves in sync a few years back with the rest of the world as far as what time it is by having the entire state observe daylight savings time. And that used to be what I call death by a thousand paper cuts, because it was, you know, we were out of sync. People didn't know what time we were on in the summer versus what time we were on in the winter. And, you know, there were missed meetings, missed conference calls, deliveries showing up too early or too late. And now, you know, we're in, every part of the state is in one time zone all year round. Now parts of the state are in the central time zone all year round, and parts of the state are in the Eastern time zone all year round. And that's okay because there are parts of the state that need to be connected to Chicago or need to be connected to Western, you know, Kentucky. But there were also parts of the state that needed to be connected with Cincinnati all year round, not just half a year, or connected to Louisville all year round, not just half a year.
We're an interesting place to be.
So when it comes to our business summit, we just try to keep moving the ball and moving positive legislation each and every year. And over the last 12 to 14 years, we've gone from being a business climate that was ranked 28th best in the country, which is really in the lower half, to this year, fifth best in the entire United States, number one in the Midwest, and the only state in the Midwest in the top 10. While our neighbor to the west, Illinois, is ranked 48th.
I'm not surprised at that.
They've got some issues. It's not too bad having them as a neighbor, though, right?
They've had too many people at the trough for far too long.
No, and a lot of them are in the prison system as well. So that's also helpful in that.
Yeah, here in Indiana, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's funny how that works out.
Over in Terre Haute in the federal prison.
Right. Kevin, if folks would like more information about these Beyond the Bicentennial Complaints or the Indiana Vision 2025 plan, where's the best resource for them to go?
To go to indianachamber.com, and you can find both Indiana Vision 2025 very easily and the Beyond the Bicentennial letters. We haven't released all the letters yet. I think we've got the third one coming out maybe tomorrow. And then the last one, which is on dynamic and creative culture, which has to do with entrepreneurship, venture capital, and Indiana as a welcoming place, including our board-adopted position supporting expansion of civil rights protections for the LGBT community, is all kind of wrapped up in that fourth goal area.
And those letters will be coming out a little bit later in September and one, as you mentioned, in October. Hey, we appreciate your time this morning. Get those shorts stretched out a little bit. Enjoy these last couple nice days of summertime. And 50 days until Election Day, so still plenty of information to get caught up and put out there, as we saw. Kevin, we thank you for your time this morning.
My pleasure to really enjoy visiting with you and your listeners back in my hometown.
That's great. And we'll hopefully we'll hear from you down the road as well.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right, take care.